Harper Audio presents Your Sacred Self, written and read by Dr. Wayne Dyer. You have been facing the wrong way. The most important insight you can have is to realize that you have been facing the wrong way for the better part of your life. Take a moment right now to experience what I mean. Picture yourself in any position that you like, standing, sitting, lying down, whatever is easiest for you to imagine. Now look at that mental picture of yourself. What you see in this exercise is a you who is always looking away from yourself, always looking outside of yourself. You are facing the wrong way. Now imagine being able to shift around and face the opposite direction. If you could in some magical way do so, then you would be facing inward. We've all been taught to look outside of ourselves for sustenance, to look beyond the self for power, love, prosperity, health, happiness, and spiritual fulfillment. We've been conditioned to believe we get life's bounty from somewhere outside of ourselves. But it's possible to reverse our gaze from outward to inward. And when we do, we find an energy we've sensed but not previously identified. There dwells within all human beings a divine energy. The power of this energy permeates our entire being and permits us to perform every function in the vast repertoire of human thoughts and behaviors. There are two aspects to this divine energy. The outer aspect causes the heart to beat and the lungs to inflate love, prosperity, health, happiness, and spiritual fulfillment. We've been conditioned to believe we get life's bounty from somewhere outside of ourselves. But it's possible to reverse our gaze from outward to inward. And when we do, we find an energy we've sensed but not previously identified. There dwells within all human beings a divine energy. The power of this energy permeates our entire being and permits us to perform every function in the vast repertoire of human thoughts and behaviors. There are two aspects to this divine energy. The outer aspect causes the heart to beat and the lungs to inflate and the senses to function. It essentially keeps our physical bodies alive. The inner aspect of this energy is dormant, but it can be awakened. This inner universe is vaster than the outer universe. Inner joy makes all joy that is experienced in the world of the senses seem meaningless. When the divine light within you is experienced directly, it adds a radiance to life unlike anything that can be described with words or pictures. When you discover your sacred self, you awaken this dormant inner energy and let it guide your life. The word most commonly used to describe this inner force is spiritual. When I talk about spirituality and being spiritual, I am describing an attitude toward God and the inner journey of enlightenment. I'm speaking of expanding the God-like qualities of love, forgiveness, kindness, and bliss within ourselves. In my interpretation, spirituality is not dogma or rules. It is light and joy and focuses on the experience of love and inner bliss, radiating those qualities outward. I call the journey to discover your sacred self your sacred quest. You need to begin looking inward at who you are and why you are here instead of outward at the physical world and things within it. There was an instant in time when you were nowhere. The moment before your conception, you were nowhere. Then, in one holy instant, you went from nowhere to now here. There will be another holy instant when you will go from nowhere to now here. We call that moment death, yet you, the divine, changeless, eternal, invisible you, will live on. If it is true that we are a part of an intelligent system, we can assume that we go from nowhere to now here for some purpose. With this realization, you can stop doubting that you are a divine creation with purpose and just accept that you are. You are a part of this intelligent system, and you are here for some divine reason. That reason, you can surely guess, is concerned with the spiritual inner energy I am writing about. Knowing your spiritual self is your sacred quest and your life challenge. So many of us have grown up believing that who we are is this body we carry around, the job we perform, and the religion we practice. Our lives are involved with externals at the same time that we see that they are always changing and shifting. Yet somewhere inside of ourselves, we feel the same. You may not have given that self aspect much of your awareness, but if you do, you will discover an inner self that never changes but is trapped in a changing world. Someday, your physical self will probably rest beneath a tombstone that records the date of your birth and the date of your death, but your inner soul knows you are eternal. Knowing this in a way that leaves no room for doubt will greatly enable your sacred quest. When you reach that state, knowing that who you are is the unchanging self, you will be on purpose in your life. Sogyal Rinpoche, in the Tibetan book of Living and Dying, puts this into words that are worth framing. In the modern world, there are few examples of human beings who embody the qualities that come from realizing the nature of mind. So it is hard for us even to imagine enlightenment or the perception of an enlightened being, and even harder to begin to think that we ourselves could become enlightened. Even if we were to think of the possibility of enlightenment, one look at what composes our ordinary mind, anger, greed, jealousy, spite, cruelty, lust, fear, anxiety, and turmoil, would undermine forever any hope of achieving it. Enlightenment, he continues, is real, and each of us, whoever we are, can, in the right circumstances and with the right training, realize the nature of mind and so know in us what is deathless and eternally pure. This is the promise of all the mystical traditions of the world, and it has been fulfilled and is being fulfilled in countless thousands of human lives. You can be one of those thousands of enlightened humans. This will happen as you discover the nature of your true self and relegate the part of yourself that is centered on the physical to the background where it belongs. From there, it can cheer you on and support your higher self rather than act in ways that sabotage your true spiritual essence. This whole business of a sacred quest is real, and you can know it, love it, and cherish it. Once you do, you will never want to go back to any way of living that is inconsistent with your divine, though invisible self. You are not that name, that occupation, that social security number, that body. You are eternally light and divine, regardless of what you have done or failed to do, regardless of what family you lived in, or what you may have been labeled. You are holy, and you have a purpose for being here. How will you experience your physical life when you have met this challenge of facing inward and living by the directives of your spiritual self? You will still chop wood and carry water, as the ancient Zen proverb tells us. You will not suddenly develop totally new talents or interests. However, you will have a level of awareness that lets you see things that have been hidden. Here are some of the insights that will give you a sense of peace and inner fulfillment. You will experience and enhance the meaningfulness of coincidences. You will become aware that there are no accidents in this intelligent system. You realize that everything that shows up in your life has something to teach you. You appreciate everyone and everything in your life. You are unable to entertain any doubts about the universal source of energy. You know that all beings are a part of it and receive sustenance from it. You are convinced that all weakness and falsehood come from a refusal to know this. You will feel loved. You will call for and accept divine guidance. This vital spiritual nourishment is felt in both your inner and outer experiences. Immobilizing fear diminishes as you feel the presence of the divine energy within you. All seems as it should be, even though you may not understand it. Your desires to right wrongs and fix the broken parts of your life are also part of this divine plan. You pursue your desires to serve God and humanity with clarity and peace. By focusing your inner energy on the beauty that surrounds you, you will receive that energy from your surroundings. With practice, this kind of receptiveness will become a source of strength and sustenance in your daily life. You will sense that anything that is destructive to one human is destructive to all. This higher awareness will lead you to the conclusion that Mahatma Gandhi came to, that God has no religion. That awareness will give you a loving energy that will help to bring all of us together. You will make a new agreement with reality. When your soul becomes the guiding force in your life, you will break the ordinary agreement with reality, intellectually and physically. Your level of awareness will shift so dramatically that you will no longer feel bound by the agreement that defines reality for most others. You will experience surrender and acceptance. You will finally stop fighting and simply let go. You will accept that God knows what she is doing. This surrendering process will make you more effective in your sacred quest. You will become a waking dreamer. Everything that you are capable of achieving while dreaming will be possible while awake. The power of your mind to manifest what previously could only occur in sleeping dreams will begin to be your awakened reality. Some people take a lifetime to learn how to become a waking dreamer, to literally be in a dream state while awake. With your heightened awareness and the guidance of your higher self, you will become one of those waking dreamers. You will know the power and ecstasy of silence. As Herman Melville wrote, silence is the only voice of our God. All profound things and emotions of things are preceded and attended by silence. You will know that there is a spiritual solution to every problem. Problems such as addictions to drugs, foods, and alcohol have solutions in your higher self. By going within, you will see your excessive desires for something outside of yourself as an inadequate refuge for worldly pain. When you begin to achieve the highest levels of pleasure and euphoria by facing inward, the desire and the need for externals will simply disappear. Every problem, be it with relationships, finances, health, or self-image, has a solution in the sacred self. When you are peaceful, experience silence, meditate, and listen, really listen to God, you will be directed away from the worldly and toward the divinity that is within you. You will know what you need to do. You will shift from acquiring to sharing. You will desire less and yet feel more fulfilled. You will shift your attention away from yourself and take pleasure in serving others. You will live authentically. You will accept yourself, knowing that whatever behaviors you exhibited in the past, even the ones that may have been destructive and immoral, were a part of who you were at the time, and they had great lessons built into them for you to transcend. You will be able to say with conviction, I am what I am. While some of the people who are close to you may find this difficult to accept, you will no longer be able to compromise yourself. You will be less judgmental and more forgiving. You will begin seeing that judging others does not define them, it defines you. Consequently, you will be less inclined to judge anyone or anything. You will also begin to forgive yourself. You will see mistakes as lessons for you to transcend. This will free you from the tyranny of self-recrimination. You have made the decision to be free. Up to now, I have described the sacred quest and how it will feel when you turn your life around. The following section offers suggestions for daily practice. These exercises will help you with the about-face process. Each day, make an attempt to serve others in some small way, and do not tell anyone. Copy this ancient truth and reread it daily. When you seek happiness for yourself, it always eludes you. When you seek happiness for others, you will find it yourself. Practice making meaningful coincidences. Get a clear picture in your mind of something that you would like to see happen in your life. A job opportunity, meeting your perfect partner, quitting an addictive behavior. Keep your inner focus on this picture and extend love outwardly as frequently as possible with this picture in mind. Keep yourself appraised of the inner world where you do all of your living. With this awareness, you will begin to know your divinity. Out of this awareness, you will be able to co-create the world that you desire. Have private conversations with God. In these conversations, rather than ask for special favors, affirm your willingness to use all of your inner strength to create solutions. Take time to appreciate beauty. Attempt to remove all enemies from your thoughts. Think of yourself as limitless as you make a new agreement with reality. Picture yourself able to accomplish anything your mind can envision. Allow yourself the freedom to dream of flying, shape-shifting, practicing bilocation, disappearing and reappearing. Make your own agreement with reality that is dependent solely on what you want it to be. Surrender. Stop asking, why me? Dream awake. Allow your mind to create all that you can create in your sleeping dreams. By practicing this exercise, you will someday be unable to distinguish between your waking dream and your sleeping dream. Give yourself time each day for silence. It may be a form of meditation, but if this is not your choice, then simply allow yourself some silent moments. Experience your silence for at least 30 minutes each day. Imagine a spiritual solution to your problem. This is a spiritual approach to the resolution of your problem. You have become the observer. You are viewing the emotions concerning the problem simply as energy. Before long, you will see the emotions disappearing. Your feelings of sadness and anxiety and fear will dissipate just through the act of observing. As you become less and less attached emotionally, the problem slowly disappears as the solution appears. A spiritual solution is one in which you detach yourself personally from the outcome and see the energy as flowing through you. By observing that energy, you make yourself separate from the pain. The act of compassionate observation releases the problem. Lighten your load beginning today. Go through all of the possessions that you no longer use and share them with others. You can do this with everything you own. Work at being content with who you are rather than pleasing others by being inauthentic. Say to yourself, I am what I am, and it's okay as long as I'm not hurting anyone else in the process. Direct your attention to what pleases you. Judge not. These, then, are some suggestions that you can work on daily as you begin your quest for your sacred self. You have the capacity to meet this challenge, but before you will be truly ready, you need to examine many of the habits that you've acquired over a lifetime of having your ego and the world of the material be the authoritative forces in your life. In the years following your arrival from nowhere to now here, you were taught many beliefs about what you were capable of doing and what was impossible for you to do. It is time to let go of beliefs that have served you well, but now keep you from moving along your sacred path. The process of letting go is easily understood if you can picture life as giving exams. Just as we are required to pass exams throughout our school experience, so too are we required to pass exams in the larger school called life. If we pass them, we move on to the next level, and then take the exam for that level throughout our stay and now here. If we don't pass, we repeat the course and continue at that level until we get the lesson. Many years, even an entire lifetime, might be consumed repeating a lesson in order to pass a spiritual examination. We might find ourselves repeating the same behaviors tirelessly and depressingly, over and over, without getting the lesson that life is trying to teach us. You may find yourself going from one bad relationship to another, even seeking the same person each time, only in a different body. Repeatedly, you might find yourself being dominated, unappreciated, or taken for granted by an inconsiderate partner. Perhaps you continue in an occupation repeating the behaviors of previously unsatisfying job experiences. You could continually latch onto the same kinds of germs and repeat debilitating disease patterns. People who successfully put themselves onto the spiritual path are living the life they love and feeling productive because they realize that life patterns are trying to tell them something. They understand that those situations are the exams. The same responses, the same answers that they've always been given previously, will not get different results. The decision is made to pass this exam in this area at this time by responding differently. To move on to the next level in this curriculum called life, you have to pass the exams along the way. Having a personal history keeps us from now. This is a radical idea, perhaps, but I am asking you to consider the possibility of totally eradicating your personal history from your consciousness and simply living completely in the present moment. The first thing that might pop into your mind, as it did into mine when I began to consider this possibility, is that it is impossible. I do have a memory, and it would be folly for me to pretend that I am not the product of my past. What I am asking you to develop is a forgettery to go along with your memory. The point is that as a result of being a product of your past, you are dancing to a tune thrown at you by others. In order to take the steps upward toward your sacred quest, you must toss out the idea that you are unable to take those steps in the first place. Let go of all the beliefs that convince you of your inadequacies and shortcomings. Clean out that closet of worn-out loyalties to what you can and cannot do. Just open yourself up right in this moment. Be like a clear, blank slate. Nothing is imprinted or projected onto this slate. It begins with no. It ends with now. There is no guilt about erasing your personal history. There is great love and respect for all that you have learned up until now, but now is blank and, most important, open to all possibilities. No restrictions, no limitations, only the willingness to experience God and the entire divinity of the universe within yourself. Your life is no longer to be constrained by what you've known as your personal history. Your individual soap opera has received its cancellation notice. In the instant that you drop that personal history, you become eternal. You always have been. You always will be. Finally, you are working on answering the question, who am I? Your answers no longer need be confined to the labels that defined your body and your life experience. Your personal history has attempted to convince you that you are one or several of the labels that you have been assigned. Ultimately, you adopted the labels as who and what you were. In the process of erasing your personal history, you need to remove all the artificial labels. Here are some of the things that you are not. You are not your name. the label that is your name originated in antiquity, usually based on the work of your ancestors. Your name was given to you to help distinguish your body from the other bodies around you and to give others a word to use when they want to refer to you. But don't for a moment think that this is who you are. Indeed, it is who you are not. You are not your body. Notice how the previous sentence uses the phrase, your body. This implies that the body is something that you possess. You are the possessor of the body and the invisible force behind the body, but not the body itself. The body is nothing more than a conglomeration of raw material, including bones and gristle and blood and iron and calcium and skin. As you consult your personal history, you will find lots of trauma about the body's importance. Were you taught that your appearance said a lot about you? Most of us were taught to spend hours before mirrors worrying about posture, physique, skin, absence or presence of hair, weight, height, and on and on. But this is your false self at work. You own the body. You are not the body. You are not your mind. Just as we say your body, we also say your mind. This implies the owner of the mind. You think thoughts with your mind. Therefore, these are the thoughts, and there is the thinker of the thoughts. For most of your life, you've been taught that you are your mind. You've been training your intellect, attending classes ad infinitum, and identifying yourself somehow with what you know. As you leave your personal history behind, you will leave behind the notion that you are your mind. You are not your occupation. You are not engineer, nor teacher, nor secretary, nor shopkeeper. These are choices that the invisible divine you has made as your way of fulfilling your heroic mission while visiting the now here. The more your position becomes defined as who you are, the more difficult it is for you to know truth and freedom. The role identification itself can keep you away from your own true higher self, since the role of occupation is the dominant force in your life. Dropping your personal history involves shedding the notion that you are what you do. Remember this exercise in logic. If you are what you do, then when you don't, you aren't. Make every effort to remove these labels from yourself and know that you are not what you do, nor are you the doer. You are the one who watches the you who is doing. You are not your relationships. Certainly the love energy between you and all of those in your immediate circle is very significant, but it is not who you are. You are not your country, your race, or your religion. Discard these names, and you will identify with the realm of the spirit rather than the world of the ego. Then you are no longer willing to fight the fights of your ancestors who have tried to convince you whom to hate and whom to love. You will no longer participate in the tribal consciousness in which you perceive yourself to be better than another by virtue of your birthplace or skin color. Your personal history has trained you in the ways of your tribe. These are limitations that you do not need to have. Let go of that identification with the labels and choose a new perspective of unity consciousness. You are united with all souls. Their packaging or location is simply irrelevant. It is now time to begin the task of recognizing and releasing beliefs and opinions that do not fit into your new agreement with reality. Take a look at some of those ingrained beliefs and shift them out of your consciousness. Your personal history is replete with beliefs. These beliefs are at the core of your understanding of what it is that constitutes your reality. You have used them to explain why your life has taken the course it has. Resolve to remove those that are inconsistent with the new agreement with reality that you are creating. Now you will be asked to identify and then change core beliefs that you no longer want. You might wonder why one would hold on to unwanted belief systems. In Be As You Are, Ramana Maharshi, one of India's 20th century saints, has this to say in response to why human beings continue to repeat self-negating ways. Pleasure or pain are aspects of the mind only. Our essential nature is happiness. But we have forgotten the self and imagine that the body or the mind is the self. It is that wrong identity that gives rise to misery. So what is to be done? This mental tendency is very ancient and has continued for innumerable past births. Hence it has grown strong. That must go before the essential nature, happiness, asserts itself. Those are the words of a great saint, Ramana Maharshi. This tape may help you answer the rhetorical question that is being posed by Ramana Maharshi. What is to be done? Here are several of the most common and difficult to undo beliefs that are taught in Western civilization. Examine each of these core beliefs in terms of how it operates in your own life. Then, consider some of the suggestions that I've offered. In the process, you will be rewriting your new agreement with reality and perhaps creating your answers to the question, what is to be done? Remember that your entire life is concerned with the accumulation of energy. The more beliefs that you remove from your inner space, the more room there is for new energy. Ask yourself if these beliefs are ones that you want to maintain or let go of. And keep in mind, if these beliefs do not serve you, they are lies that live endlessly. As Mark Twain suggests in his famous quote, the difference between a cat and a lie is that a cat has only 9 lives. Here's the first belief that you need to eradicate from your life. More is better. The pursuit of more confines one to a life of striving. It is impossible to strive and enjoy life. Some of the signs that more is better has become a cornerstone in your life are the following. You must be busy to be fulfilled. You must make more money than you currently are making. You must get a promotion to prove your worth. You need to have more of everything. To change this, you will want to declare a halt to your constant pursuit of more by knowing that you don't need anything else in order to be free. More is better keeps us exclusively in the physical domain. The spiritual self is not allowed in our daily lives. Inner energy is concentrated on accumulations, acquisitions, rewards, trophies, approval, and money. Some people experience guilt, shame, and self-reproach when they think they are being lazy and worthless, and they feel irresponsible when they are not pursuing more. We are taught the game early. Starting in school, we learn to pursue higher grades, additional diplomas, and external titles. There is no peace in this pursuit. The feeling of peace is there when you are facing away from more is better. It indicates that your spiritual self is calling you. The good and the wise lead quiet lives, Euripides said centuries ago. It is not because the pursuit of more is inherently bad that I included at the top of this list. It is because it denies you the peace and harmony that are intrinsic to your sacred quest. You do not have to become inert to be at peace. You can abandon the idea of more is better and replace it with an inner serenity that does not need more in order to be acceptable. You have received beliefs from an endless chain of people who have been willing victims for generations. When you let go of these beliefs, you will open an inner reservoir of space that allows you to accumulate a different kind of energy and will direct you toward peace rather than toward tumult and a bypass operation. Examine carefully how much of your life energy is used in pursuit of what you don't want or need. Practice one day at a time the idea of saying no to more. A very emphatic no, I will not pursue that item. In place of pursuing more is better, spend time playing with your son or granddaughter. Read the New Testament instead of chasing after another object. Go for a long walk along the riverfront rather than spending time trying to get ahead. If you were raised on blame, it is a habit for you to reach for this excuse whenever you wish to explain why something is not working in your life. You can, for instance, blame lack of prosperity on a lot of externals, your culture, the stock market, politicians, your parents, lady luck, the greed of others. You can blame illness on heredity and the flu season and bad luck of the environment. Your sour relationships can be blamed on your partners, their inability to love you, your upbringing, or your parents. Your personality can be blamed on your parents, or your genes, or your childhood, or your siblings, or your birth order. And your physical appearance can be the fault of genetics, the food manufacturers, advertisers, or the polluted environment. This is potentially an endless list. The alternative to blame is self-responsibility, becoming an inner-directed person. You may not have been taught to consider taking responsibility for the events of your life. But if you are unwilling to discontinue the blame game, you will be unable to initiate your sacred quest. When you are inclined to think that someone else is responsible for your circumstances, take an instant to say a prayer of thanks for the lesson. The lesson is to become aware that you are the one who is experiencing the feeling. You can do this the instant that you recognize yourself playing the blame game. Feel thankful toward those you've let anger you. Give inner thanks for the reminder that the feeling you are experiencing is inside you, not outside you. Say to yourself, I do not want to be right. I want to know the truth. I want my higher self to rule. No one is to blame for how I am feeling. It is my feeling, and I respect that. These kinds of affirmations will lead you to self-reliance and to the way of the sacred quest. Your spiritual soul will then become the guiding light for the remainder of your time in the now here. Another belief that you have to rid yourself of is that idealism can't coexist with realism. Don't be such a dreamer. Be realistic. Forget about your inner vision. Look around you at what is happening. This is what is real. Have you heard similar pronouncements often in your life? If so, you probably developed an attitude about what was possible and what was impossible. If the ideals that attracted you were labeled impossible, you probably sacrificed them for a way of viewing your world that was based on what others determined was realistic. Discarding that old belief about reality can be a major task on the path of the sacred quest. Are you ready to reconsider your view of reality? Perhaps William Blake's statement will inspire you. He said, "If the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear as it is, infinite." Can you imagine your reality in that way? Everything infinite? When your perception is expanded, nothing is real and nothing is imagined. All there is perception. When you cultivate this awareness, your reality is no longer defined by the physical world. At the tiniest quantum level, time is not a reality. Particles can be in more than one place at the same time, and they appear and disappear according to how we observe them and what measuring devices we use. All of this constitutes a new reality. Always remember, we are made of the very same energy. If you want a richer experience of your life, abandon the idea that your reality is only what your senses report. Your inner world and all of the energy of your higher awareness creates a reality very different from that which you've been taught. In this reality, your higher spirit, the loving presence within you, is dominant. In this world, you rely on something quite different than the ordinary reality. Choosing the way of the sacred quest means you will learn to rely on this new reality. Shift back to being the idealist who had inner inklings about the world of spirit. That idealist within you will happily do the following, according to Buddha. Rely on the message of the teacher, not on his personality. Rely on the meaning, not just on the words. Rely on the real meaning, not on the provisional one. Rely on your wisdom mind, not on your ordinary judgmental mind. Here are some suggestions for releasing realism and welcoming idealism. Trust your intuition. You will define your own reality from now on, and your definition will be based on your inner wisdom. There are no limits within, and within is where you are going from now on for your direction. Make a list of all the things you believed in before you were told they were impossible. Writing and drawing about those early beliefs will help to re-energize them. Practice experimenting with your new reality. Keep a vision of what it is that you would like to have occur, or someone you would want to call you. Anything that is important to you, meditate on it, manifesting into your own life. Keep track of all the little things that lead up to bringing it about. After a while, you will notice that your reality has become one in which you play a role as co-creator. As a child, you were aware of a second aspect of your being. Here I am calling that your double, or your ethereal body. As you grew older, you lost touch with this ethereal energy body. This does not mean that it is unavailable to you. Your physical body is what you've come to believe is who you are. Yet this body, in and of itself, is neutral. Your body, in and of itself, can bring you neither peace nor turmoil. It is almost impossible to make contact with your higher self when you only believe in your false self and the material world. Somewhere within you, you are aware that all of the material world is energy. This energy appears solid from the perspective of your eyes, your perceptual equipment. A closer look at the physical world reveals a dance of particles in endless voids of empty space. A closer look at those particles reveals that they are involved in another, tinier dance of more particles in a field of emptiness ad infinitum until there is only energy and no particles. This is our reality. But we've been persuaded that what we see with the limitations of our eyes is the only reality there is. Your body is a part of that perceptual system you have been conditioned to accept. Your task is to dissolve the barrier that separates these two aspects of your being. When you do this, you leap into the unimaginable. Here are some suggestions for releasing your belief in physical exclusivity. Open yourself to the possibility of other dimensions of reality being available to you. Affirm to yourself that this is all a possibility. Very few people believed in the existence of microscopic life before the invention of the microscope. There were zillions of tiny creatures swimming around in their own pool of reality, independent of anyone's opinion about them. They exist now in your skin, your eyes, your fingernails, and your hair. All of those things that you sense to be solid are alive with invisible activity. Apply the same awareness to this notion. You can't see it, but you are an energy body and a physical body. Your double would like to introduce itself to you. Our education emphasizes believing in sensory experiences. Such experiences seem to tell us that we are separate, unique, special, and disconnected from each other. Very few of us learn that there is some kind of unity. The truth is that everything is linked, including you, to all other beings. Discard the belief that you are separate from everyone else. You will acquire a reverence for everyone that will turn into love. When we lose our sense of us versus them and know that we are all us, then we have a win-win relationship with life. Practice letting go of your ego's need to be separate from others. Begin viewing yourself as a member of the human family called us. Share your toys with others, especially neighbors and even strangers, as if they were a part of your family. As the English proverb says, the hand that gives, gathers. Treat everyone as if they are part of the tribe you love belonging to. Don't mentally note their differences. Carry an inner determination to see others as just as much a part of you on a spiritual level as is your child or your spouse. Create an affirmation expressing the idea that you are my brother, my sister. You are a part of my us. There are no more thems in my life. You have been taught that there are some bad people in the world who are best ignored. I'm suggesting the contrary. Everyone who comes into your life in any capacity is valuable. The petty tyrants in your life are just as divine as those who provide you with encouragement and support. Emerson put this important lesson like this: the whole course of things goes to teach us faith. The whole course. This means everything that comes your way. Perhaps the single most significant person in my life, the one person who made the greatest difference for me and my own spiritual development, is a person who, by all accounts, was a petty tyrant. This man was my father. He abandoned his family, spent time in prison as a petty criminal, and was abusive toward his wife. At the age of 49, he died from excessive use of alcohol. I have no memory of him. My knowledge of him is based on what I heard and later discovered to be true when I investigated his life. Yet this petty, tyrannical con man was the main character leading to my transformation. I wrote about forgiving my father, and you'll see it when you believe it. I discarded the hatred and the bitterness that I had carried with me for a lifetime. A single act of forgiveness and letting go opened the way to my sacred quest and the writing, speaking, and living of the miracles I write about. I learned what I had to transcend. When I now occasionally slip into some of the behavior that I know destroyed his life, I remind myself that this is not my path. This is not the kind of father I wish to be. This is not the kind of husband I wish to be. It is his example that helps me get myself back to the path that I know is my spiritual destiny. Be thankful for those petty tyrants. They are there for a very important reason. Ignoring them guarantees that more of them will appear in different bodies later on in your life. Prayers of thankfulness are wonderful affirmations of this truth. The experience of being deserted by a spouse might teach you to be independent. This type of situation may introduce you to the loving presence within. Perhaps you will learn the difference between aloneness and loneliness and decide to love the person you are alone with. The alcoholic years can teach us that we are greater than any substance. We might learn to be thankful for those drunken teachers and consider them instructors from God. Even physical abuse may have a powerful lesson in it. We may discover that we are more than a body. It's possible for us to know that no one can reach our inner self with their blows. Make a list of all the people you have written out of your life as evil or scumbags. Write down everything that their presence taught you. Have you learned to not repeat victim behaviors? Reconsider that so-called scumbag's value to your life. You could not have learned the lesson without that person. The evidence for this is that you obviously needed to bring that person into your life because you did. Look for the fullness of God in everyone. Realize that in some unfathomable way, the fullness is operating even if you cannot see it. This is the end of Side 1. Another belief that you need to discard to get onto your sacred path is that goals are essential for your own success. I am pretty much convinced that there really is a formula for failure, which is nothing more than trying to please everyone and ignoring our own inner impulses. But I do not believe that there is one single formula for success. Living the spiritual life does not mean setting goals and following them assiduously. The way of the sacred quest is different than that. This difference is sensed in this little stanza by Rumi, a Sufi poet who lived 1,000 years ago. He said, "Do you think I know what I am doing? That for one breath or half breath I belong to myself? As much as a pen knows what it's writing, or the ball can guess where it's going next." As an instrument of God, you are ever in the presence of a loving guidance. With this inner awareness, you will not lose sight of yourself and become a homeless bum begging for your next meal if that is not the way of your sacred quest. You will know your purpose, pursue it with vigor, and trust writing, or the ball can guess where it's going next. As an instrument of God, you are ever in the presence of a loving guidance. With this inner awareness, you will not lose sight of yourself and become a homeless bum begging for your next meal if that is not the way of your sacred quest. You will know your purpose, pursue it with vigor, and trust the universe to handle the details. It is this kind of awareness that has led me to work even harder and produce more effectively and feel more purposeful, not a set of goals that I strove toward. I can truly identify with Rumi in this regard. I have never known where I am going. I quiet myself, listen, and then allow myself to be guided. Having goals is a way of abandoning now in favor of a plan for some future now. The absence of a lot of specific goals helps cultivate your awareness that you are not alone on this journey. You begin to trust in the divine guidance to assist you in your present moment. You come to know the universe will handle the details if you surrender and let go somewhat. How to release the importance of goals for success? Be willing. This is the most important suggestion I can offer. Be willing to do whatever it takes to turn that inner knowledge and future pull into your reality. Relax about the future and let it go. Instead, make an active commitment to enjoy this day a little more. The more peaceful you are with yourself and your role here, the more productive and efficient you become. It is very difficult to accomplish anything when you are stressed over the outcome. When you relax and get peaceful, you become inspired and efficient. Toss out the goals and live your life knowing that you are co-creating it. Another belief that you've had handed to you that you'll need to discard is that you must always do your best at everything that you do. Throughout our lives, we hear, "I don't really care how well you do as long as you do your best." Examine this idea and you may come up with a different conclusion. You don't really have to do your best. In fact, your best is something that you can never measure or even know. You can drive yourself to neurotic extremes with this idea of always having to do your best. Your best leaves no room for improvement. It means that you have to go all out 100% every single time you do anything. When you remove the stigma of having to perform at a given level, you remove the ego's need to be judged better than others. You are better off to simply do and enjoy and be willing to learn. Stop imposing on yourself and your children the belief that you must do your best. Experiment with performing tasks that seem to flow from your inner promptings. But detach yourself from the need to measure to see whether your efforts have been worthwhile. While meditating, get a picture of yourself being able to do anything. Give yourself permission to be with this image and to forget about the outcome. See how peaceful you feel when you're not being tested, when you're allowed to just be. Give yourself the same permission in all of your daily undertakings. Another belief that you'll need to discard is that dreams are not reality. Most of us were taught to believe in two separate realities. One is our waking reality, the other is our dream reality. In this formula, when we're in a dream state, we're in a world that is unreal. We disregard dreams as a mental exercise that happens only while we sleep. Waking consciousness is considered reality, and dreaming consciousness is considered unreality. I suggest that you reconsider this belief. Imagine that your dreams are simply different aspects of the same reality, and that they contain teachers for you on your sacred path. Begin with understanding that this is primarily a world of energy and only secondarily a world of material objects. To know your sacred self, you need to perceive energy directly. This is what you are capable of doing in your dream state. The entire basis of your perception shifts from concrete objects to energy shapes. When this is part of your reality, your dream state becomes something that you share with other spiritually attuned beings. Eventually, you can be aware that you are dreaming while you are dreaming. This is called lucid dreaming. In lucid dreaming, you can control your dreams and be able to dream awake. Through the process of dreaming, you perceive other dimensions of reality, which are shut out by your conditioning. I'm not talking here about dream interpretation. I am talking about knowing your dream life and being aware of experiencing dimensions of a reality while you are sleeping, which will also become available in your waking moments. Your dreams are created with the same body and the same brain as is the rest of your perceptual world. It's all yours. You do not leave every night and take on a new brain to experience your nighttime reality. Everything that you are capable of knowing and being convinced of in your dream has a potential for being experienced in all moments of your daily life. Everything. Yes, I know this is a radical notion, but it leads you to know the power of your energy body. You enter your dreaming world with a complete absence of doubt about what you can experience. With that absence of doubt, there are absolutely no limits. Then, when you awaken to what you call your waking consciousness, you still have the same body, the same brain, and the same perceptual equipment, but you introduce doubt. I believe that your dreams do not reveal things about you, but that they are you. They are real, and they can become highly effective in helping you to experience your highest spiritual self. When you do go to sleep, encourage yourself to be aware that you are entering your dream state. Just this awareness is the first step toward higher awareness through dreaming. As you drift off, make a mental note to yourself that you are about to enter the dream state and that you are pleased to be aware of it. Make an effort before you drift off to consciously see elements of your upcoming dream. Tell yourself you will make a note of an object, a room, or a specific location while you're in the dream. Experience as much detail as you can concerning the object while dreaming. If it is a lamp, for instance, bring it closer to you with the power of your mind. Examine the color and the shape and the intensity of the light. You want to make direct contact with your energy body, that special body of energy that coexists at all times with your physical body. By examining the content of your dreams, you will give yourself access to this higher energy. You will prove to yourself that your mental energy is a phenomenon that you can manipulate with practice and effort. Eventually, you will be able to access this energy in all moments of your life. In the first part of this tape, I've described the ideas and opinions you've been exposed to that have probably influenced your life. Many of those ideas, given to you by others, may now be your daily reality, defining for you what is possible and impossible in your life. I've encouraged you to abandon many of those beliefs and to make a new agreement with reality that is based instead on what you know is your truth. Once you know your personal truth, your reality will be free of doubt. You might not think that doubt could have much of an effect on your life, but part of the damage that it creates is that it is so thoroughly etched onto your belief system that it becomes impossible to think any other way. Doubting our potential achievements, we proclaim with certainty just what is and just what is not possible. But when doubt is banished, we come to a knowing that leads to creative and inspired solutions far beyond what we believed was possible. Can you imagine your reality if you were brought up in an environment free of doubt? How would your life be different if you had never heard, "It can't be done, that's not possible, accept your limitations"? What if you had been encouraged to exercise the energy of your mind? You might have used that energy to explore your power to influence other beings and things and the weather and your own creativity. If you had been fortunate enough to be raised without doubt, you would possess an incredible inner sense of your magnificence. Never would you utter sentences that reflect doubt, such as, "I'm not talented enough," "It can't be done," "Get real," and "Don't you know that there are limits to everything?" The sacred self knows no doubt. It has no limits, and it has no boundaries. What would our world be like if we had learned this in childhood? It is time to know that we have a personal responsibility to incorporate the sacred quest in our lives and to introduce our children to this aspect of human life. I offer my own children opportunities to learn about their inner limitlessness in a variety of ways. For example, I invite them outside with me to make clouds. After dinner, we take a blanket outside and lie down, and we engage in what has come to be called cloud making. The children start by creating an inner picture of a form they want to see in the clouds. Then they concentrate their energy on a particular cloud, attempting to influence it to design their own inner picture. The neighborhood has gotten used to hearing my kids shout, "I'm making a house, Daddy. Watch my cloud move. I'm moving it with my mind." Beliefs, you see, are handed to you. But knowings come from within. There's a long list of things that you believe about yourself, the world, and God, and your potential, and the fate of capitalism, and so much more. These beliefs, which came to you from outside of yourself, became your very own. Your knowings, however, all came to you as a result of your own experience of having decided to transcend a belief. No one can hand you a knowing. You must have the direct inner experience of the decision-making function to make it a known. Beliefs also will let you down in a crisis, while knowings never let you down. When you believe in something without knowing it, there is doubt attached to the belief. The doubt resides somewhere deep in the recesses of your mind. Nevertheless, it exists as a thought that you will ultimately call upon when you want to put that belief into practice. I remember believing that I couldn't do a backward dive into the swimming pool. Every time I said to myself, this time I can do it, that nagging little doubt would surface at precisely the moment I would attempt the back dive. I'd find my body turning around at the very last second. The tiny doubt attached to the belief about my ability was what I relied upon at the moment of execution. If you believe something based only on what others have told you is true, when a big test shows up, that belief often will let you down. If you have a belief that God will be there for you in a moment of trauma and that any suffering that you are experiencing is just as divine as any joy that you have experienced, but you do not know this, you will find the pain of your disappointment will become an affirmation that God doesn't really exist for you. Your belief will be shattered in a moment of trauma. This is because you are attempting to have a vision of God that has come to you from outside of yourself, and it is weakened with doubt. Knowing God and suffering in the way William Blake wrote about in this following poem would pull you through your trauma safely, as the poet suggests. He says, "Man was made for joy and woe, and when this we rightly know, through the world we safely go. Joy and woe are woven fine, a clothing for the soul divine." Knowings can never let you down because they are woven into the fabric of your being. If you cannot doubt that which you are, and you know that you are, then you will never be disappointed. Again, beliefs have that insidious doubt attached to them, while knowings are free of such contamination. Your beliefs are mental exercises, while your knowings are physical exercises. You may believe that you have no talent for art, but somewhere deep within your consciousness there exists a tiny smidgen of doubt about whether it would prove really true were you to actually apply yourself in a new way. When you know something, it becomes your physical reality, and you act on this knowing at all times. When you merely believe something, whether it be negative or positive, you have a tiny bit of doubt connected to it, and that doubt becomes your reality. Beliefs are mental. Knowings are physical, though they originate as mental beliefs. Beliefs restrict you, while knowings empower you. Louise Hay is a perfect example of this. She's a beautiful and sensitive woman who's written many powerful books on healing and is the publisher of a collection of my own personal affirmations and daily reminders, a little book called Everyday Wisdom. We were on a national television hookup together when a caller asked whether Louise had ever considered any traditional approaches to treating her cancer 8 years earlier. Louise gave the kind of answer that I hope you will be able to cultivate as you see how knowing can empower you to higher levels than you might have considered. She responded, "I knew in my heart that I could not allow them to radiate me or to put chemicals into me or cut me. I just knew that this could not be my method for dealing with this cancer. My knowing led me to other alternatives, which I have written about, and ultimately to the eradication of the cancer from my body. I am not disparaging any other form of treatment. I just knew inwardly that I couldn't go in that direction." The key here is her use of the word knew. She didn't believe in an alternative therapy. She knew that those traditional methods were inconsistent with who she was. She consulted her knowing. That knowing empowered her. Your beliefs are transitory, while your knowings are eternal. Think about many of the beliefs that you have today and how they have shifted over the years. In fact, many of the beliefs that you now hold were met with revulsion and disgust when you first experienced them. There's an old saying, "Fear knocked at the door, and faith answered, and no one was there." Fear stems from doubts we have about our divinity. The antidote to fear is faith. I know within that I am not alone. Ever. I know that I have divine guidance available to me at all times. This inner knowing makes fear impossible. You too are not alone. And you also have omnipresent guidance accessible at will. When you truly know that the loving presence is always with you, the possibility of living with both doubt and fear evaporates. This is a belief that you can't get from another person. It has to have the quality of being a knowing. Then the notion of fear vanishes. The things we most commonly fear can be explained away by lengthy research and investigation. Or fear can be eradicated with one short and simple statement. I have chosen the second way, hoping to stun you with the simplicity of eliminating fear. Here are some of those fears. Fear of failing. Get rid of it. You cannot fail at anything. Everything you do produces a result. It is what you do with the results that counts. Labeling yourself a failure is meaningless. Fear of disapproval. Get rid of it. You do not need external validation. You are a divine creation of God. Your path is unique and special. Get on with your purpose. Fear of suffering. Get rid of it. You cannot suffer when you know your sacred self. Only the person you imagine yourself to be suffers. Your joy is divine, and so is your suffering. All of the woe is a part of God's plan, bringing transcendent wisdom when you stop judging it. Fear of isolation. Get rid of it. You can never be alone. When you know this, you will never fear loneliness. There is a gigantic support network of loving souls with you on a similar path. Know that to be true. Stay focused on your purpose and forget about being isolated. When you do this, all of the guidance and love that you need will begin to be known by you. Fear of looking foolish. Get rid of it. When you are doing the work of the higher self, you are always on purpose. Whether others judge you as foolish or not is irrelevant. And finally, fear of success. Get rid of it. Replace the fear with knowing that you deserve any prosperity or abundance that comes your way. Know that when you are on the way of your sacred quest, external measures of success will appear. Your success, however, is an inner matter. It is your personal feeling about yourself, and certainly you do not want to be afraid of yourself. These, then, are the six fears that interfere the most with the way of our divine purpose. Know that you possess the inner tools to transform your life, and the fear will be gone before you can utter, "Get rid of it." One of those inner tools is to acknowledge to yourself when fear enters your personal picture. When you do notice yourself experiencing fear, please be sure to gently allow it into your awareness. Feel it and refuse to judge it. The first time I had ever walked out on stage to speak before thousands of people and had forgotten my notes, I experienced severe feelings of fear. Not acknowledging my fear would have kept it right there on stage with me. But I surrendered to the fear while I reminded myself that I was not alone. I went out on that stage with my fear as my companion. Before even a few minutes had passed, I was absorbed in my mission and my fear was gone. By acknowledging the fear and then doing what you were afraid of anyway, you serve notice on those kinds of self-defeating thoughts. You also take a giant step toward banishing doubt from your life. Fear and doubt are partners. That which you doubt will cause you to be afraid. That which you fear creates doubts about your ability to deal with it. Faith is an antidote to fear and doubt. In most cases, the use of the word faith is associated with developing a religious framework for our lives. Faith and worship in this context go together. I'm not talking about faith this way. I honor whatever your religious persuasion is, but I do not want you to confuse religious beliefs with the actual presence of faith. Faith is akin to knowing God, which is different than believing in God or knowing about God. Knowing, as I am speaking about it, is an experience on a cellular level of personal experience, which has not one iota of doubt attached to it. To me, faith is an inner knowing and a capacity to see God in everything, including myself. This kind of faith does not come from books. The kind of faith I am describing does not need a religious service or a holy book. It comes from having the direct inner experience of God as a part of your higher self. It is demonstrated in countless ways in daily life. You do not necessarily have to see this inner light with your senses, yet the experience is known. You know that what you do not see is there for you as well. I've seen my wife, Marceline, demonstrate this inner faith on seven different occasions when she has given birth to our children. Throughout her pregnancies, she talks to me about her faith in God being with her. She knows that bringing a child into the world is more than a physical experience. She knows that it is a holy opportunity that she has been entrusted with. She has absolutely no doubt about her ability to proceed through all stages of her labor and childbirth without complications, pain, or any suffering. This faith literally puts her into a higher state of awareness, and her physical appearance literally changes. She has actually left the confines of her body. Through the power of her miraculous concentration on what she has to do, she proceeds unaware of surrounding distractions. Her inner faith has literally seemed to banish the doubt about her ability to deliver a baby in a spiritual and pain-free environment. She doesn't believe that God is there for her. She absolutely knows it. The idea of any doubt being present is ludicrous to her. I have been in the labor room with my wife while women all around her were out of control with fear and doubt. Marceline, relying on her faith, is participating in the act of creation as an observer and a faithful participant. In fact, she has taken that same inner knowing based on faith to assist other women in having their babies. She accompanies them through the entire process from the first month of pregnancy through delivery, helping them access their inner selves and reassuring them that if they banish doubt, they will have a spiritual childbirth experience. I have yet to see it fail. Understand that faith is a decision that you make internally. It is a mental decision to know that everything is on purpose. Faith then becomes an energy that resides within you at all times. One evening, as I sat and watched a spectacular sunset on the Gulf of Mexico, I had a stunning realization. This entire planet, with everything on it, must weigh a zillion, zillion, trillion tons and more. And there is some energy propelling it around the sun, giving the illusion that the sun is actually setting. What was really happening as I sat there was that I was setting and moving in orbit around the sun. I contemplated the enormous amount of energy that is ceaselessly working to move this enormous planet and keep it spinning and staying on course in its yearly excursion. The same energy is moving the sun in a larger orbit and moving the zillions of other celestial bodies in trillions of orbits. This energy gives the illusion that the Earth is standing still, yet we know there is enormous movement. We have faith in that energy. We trust that there will be a sunrise tomorrow morning in the east. We don't believe in it. We know it and have faith in it. That same energy is propelling you through your life and is within you at all moments. That same energy allows your lungs to fill with air, your heart to beat, and your body to stay together rather than to disintegrate. You know it. You have faith in it. That is the same kind of faith that you must develop about your entire life. You are being guided by that heavenly energy. Start to know it. You don't have to see it to believe in it, any more than you have to see the wind to know that it is there. This invisible energy that is doing so much is what you want to know. The inner faith becomes a power that was previously hidden from you. I have seen people walk barefoot as much as 40 feet on red-hot glowing coals without blistering. Before they undertake this adventure, they are trained in nothing more than faith. Their faith gives them the ability to concentrate with an intensity that can prevent their feet from blistering. I have used this kind of faith to swim across a lake in 45-degree water without experiencing any sensation of cold. I type for hours and see poems and chapters emerge without writer's block because I know that I am not alone. The cosmic energy is there within me for my use in fulfilling my personal identity. Inner faith can produce the people and the events that you need. It will work. However, this is not to imply that obstacles will not surface as well. Here are some specific suggestions for removing doubt from your inner inventory. Keep in mind that doubt not only inhibits your sacred quest, but can also be a destructive force in your daily existence. Make a decision that you are going to meet the invisible God within, the loving presence, so that you will know her. This means being willing to spend time in the inner silence of your being. Create the time and space for quieting and listening. Do nothing else, but do this daily. Keep in mind always that doubt is produced by your ego. Doubt is not a part of your higher spiritual self. With this awareness, you can learn to observe your doubt rather than choose to own it. Make a list of the beliefs that you still hang on to which no longer serve you. Seeing them in writing will help you identify how absurd it is to stay rooted in the beliefs of others. As you examine your beliefs, see how many start with should and shouldn't. These kinds of sentences were your earliest training and may still occupy such a large space inside you that you no longer have room for any new knowings. keep in mind always that doubt is a mental experience. If you want a thought to disappear, you can very simply send it away in this moment, just as you can refuse to think an unpleasant thought in any moment because you are in charge of those thoughts. So can doubt be eradicated when it shows up. Say to yourself as if you are two people, the one talking and the one listening, I have this doubt because I have allowed the persuasions of others to become my own beliefs. Now, I will think for myself and know that I do not have to live with doubt. Love is the truest antidote to fear and doubt. When you feel unconditional love for yourself as a divine creation who is here with a purpose, you release all doubt and fear concerning yourself and your place in the world. Therefore, when you experience a moment of fear and doubt, give yourself a portion of mental love and remind yourself that you are a holy creation. As you practice sending yourself love, that becomes what you have to give away. And it is also true that the more love you contain, the less room you have for the energy of fear and doubt. The banishment of doubt from your life forever will put you in touch with a mysterious power that previously had been obscured. I encourage you to let go of the doubt that you were so carefully nurtured on and let in a new knowing. The famous Native American Sitting Bull described this power in the following words. He says, Behold, my brothers, the spring has come. The earth has received the embraces of the sun, and we shall soon see the results of that love. Every seed is awakened, and so has all animal life. It is through this mysterious power that we too have our being. Notice that Sitting Bull refers to this power as love. That love within all things is also within you. Send doubt out of your consciousness and welcome knowing. This first key to higher awareness is also spoken of in the Bible, in Deuteronomy 30, verse 14. It is something very near to you, already in your mouths and in your hearts. You have only to carry it out. I leave the rest up to you. You have only to banish the doubt and carry it out. Banishing the doubt is the first of the four keys to higher awareness. The second is called cultivating the witness. There are many benefits from assuming this witness stance. I ask you to shift your self-perception and cultivate a higher aspect of yourself known as the compassionate witness. Rather than think of yourself as a human being who has thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, begin practicing stepping outside of yourself. So what does it mean to be the witness? Take a moment to reflect on how you view yourself. As you do this, think of what you might mean if you said, I was thinking to myself. You'll find that the phrase implies that there are two people rather than one. One person is the I doing the thinking. The other person is the self receiving the thinker's thoughts. The I is talking to the self, which, when you really examine your inner dialogue, you know you do hundreds of times each day. When you cultivate the witness, you remove yourself from both the I and the self position. Here, from an invisible space outside of your physical body, the witness is detached from your emotions and feelings and behaviors. Here, the witness lovingly watches your entire life transpire. So why become the witness? In my world, nothing ever goes wrong. These words were spoken by Nisargadatta Maharaj in response to an interviewer who, in exasperation, asked Maharaj to talk about the problems in his life. It is for me the single most powerful affirmation I have ever heard. I use it every day of my life, and I have it posted strategically in my office as a daily reminder of its supreme value in my life. In my world, nothing ever goes wrong. Within all of us is the eternal, changeless dimension of our higher spiritual selves. This is the invisible I that talks to the physical self. This is the thinker of the thought. This compassionate observer is not revealed with scientific instruments and doesn't appear on autopsy reports. When you are genuinely able to live in that spiritual domain of the witness, then nothing goes wrong because wrong is not possible for the witness. It is all in order. Nothing is questioned from that perspective. It is like being able to live in heaven where eternity and the soul are at the same time that you are within the physical body. But in this space, the body is not the focal point of existence. I am not suggesting that you need to sit in an ashram and discard all of your physical possessions in order to find this key to higher awareness, although that certainly is a possibility. Instead, I want you to consider how these words of nothing ever going wrong, of having no problems, and of living in a world of the changeless apply to your spiritual awakening. There is so much to learn from these ideas. Cultivating the witness will put you on the path where your higher, sacred self begins to influence your physical, ego self instead of the other way around. As Nisargadatta Maharaj puts it, give it your full attention. Examine it with loving care, and you will discover heights and depths of being which you did not dream of, engrossed as you are in your puny image of yourself. These are startling words describing the power and the value of cultivating the witness. The ordinary way of attachment and suffering can be changed when you learn to access and cultivate the witness attitude of detachment and observation. In order to cultivate your witness, you need to learn to observe your reactions in order to go beyond them. It is the going beyond that is the crux of the sacred quest. There are many ways that you can use the observation process. Here are a couple of them that are very important. The first is observing your body. This is one of the areas of being the witness that most of us have practiced somewhat. In general, we allow our body to function without interference. We are aware that there is the body and that there is a ghost in the machine, if you will. For as long as you can remember, you have been observing this phenomenon of a body. It is also true that you know that the entity that is doing the observing is removed in some dramatic way from that which it is witnessing. As you are listening to these words, you are allowing your body to act out its destiny without your meddling. You are not busy beating your heart or filling your lungs or oxygenating your blood supply or circulating your vital fluids. You allow your body to operate itself, and you allow another part of you to know the way of being the divine, quiet, non-interfering observer. This way has served you well. By just observing your body and detaching yourself from its functioning, it works as perfectly as it was ordained to. If you were constantly monitoring and attempting to control your bodily functions, you would be unduly attached to its outcome, and you would inhibit its natural functions. The times in your life when you worry or interfere with the natural functions of your body are the times when you find it breaking down. Feed your body the wrong foods and it will respond with lethargy and disease. Fail to exercise it and it will become overweight and groggy. Ignore its needs for fresh air and healthy environment and it will fall into disrepair. Feed it narcotic substances or artificial drugs and it will react with violent symptoms. When your body is in any state of disrepair, from being overweight to having back pains or nervousness or influenza or cancer or anything that is not the way of perfect health that your body knows at the cellular and genetic levels, then you are being called back to the position of loving witness. True awareness is a state of pure witnessing without any attempt to fix or change that which is being witnessed. It is a kind of non-judgmental love that by itself is healing. Even if what you observe is sickness or infirmity, the compassionate witness notes the trouble spots and observes them with unconditional love. The absence of judgment in the act of observation itself contributes the appropriate energy of love that the situation needs. The more you can practice witnessing in this way, the more you will find that the mere act of non-judgmental witnessing will keep your life moving on its sacred quest. The mechanics of creation are such that where you place your loving attention and maintain it is where the wave begins making the shift from nowhere to now here. The second way of observing is called observing your mind. Your mind is filled with thousands of thoughts every day. They come and they go like trains in a terminal. One enters, another takes its place, one exits, and along comes another. First, you want to watch your thoughts. Then you want to watch yourself watching your thoughts. Here is the door to the inner space where, free from all thoughts, you experience the bliss and the freedom that transport you directly to your higher self. The simple exercise of watching your mind manufacturing its thoughts will eventually cause unwanted, unnecessary, erroneous thoughts to dissolve. In the process of cultivating the witness, you learn to quiet your mind, to take inventory, and dispose of or reassign thoughts that generate self-defeating or ego-centered responses. In this simple process, you also come to know your spiritual self. Ego-generated thoughts play a huge role in creating the world that the ego wishes to create. Each of my thoughts seem to demand it be considered the most important. Troubles begin with a thought that you put into your mind and allow to fester to the point of anxiety. The anxiety begins to manifest in your life in physically destructive ways, which we call things like arthritis, high blood pressure, and career cardiacs. The loving, non-judgmental energy received from the observer or the witness will allow these thoughts to flow in and out as naturally as the ocean tides. Tides in, tides out. Thoughts in, thoughts out. You will learn to be a witness to your thoughts in the same way that you observe the tide. And the process will cleanse and redistribute and remove thoughts in much the same way as the driftwood on the beach. What remains is generally quite pleasing. Witnessing your thoughts will take some practice. With proficiency comes wonder and delight. Trauma is dissolved in the thinking stage and prevented from manifesting into your everyday world. Here are some suggestions for putting the witness into your life. Begin to notice the noticer. As you take note of your world, both inner and outer, begin to familiarize yourself with the noticer who is behind that which is being noticed. If you do this several times each day, you will begin to see that you are much more than just a body and mind going through the program motions of your life. Your realization of your true self as the witness behind that which is being witnessed will bring you a new dimension of creativity and bliss, much more than just a body and mind going through the program motions of your life. Your realization of your true self as the witness behind that which is being witnessed will bring you a new dimension of creativity and bliss. Try on this exercise. Think of something that has been bothering you for a long period of time. Now go to a quiet place and close your eyes. Just see the problem surfacing on the blank screen in your consciousness. Notice all aspects of the problem, what it looks like, when it shows up, what you feel when it is on your mind, the pain and the fear that you have when it is present, how you have dealt with it unsuccessfully in the past. Think of everything that you can which is related to the problem. Then, detach yourself in your mind from the problem. Just allow it to sit there on the screen of your mind. Look at it from the viewpoint of the compassionate witness who just non-judgmentally notices the screen. Watch it like a movie, allowing it to change in whatever way it does. Just observe it with loving permission for it to do whatever it wants to do. You will see it change and fade in and out of awareness. With each change or movement on the screen, remain in the caring witness mode of knowing the energy will do what it will and will also be accompanied by the loving energy from the witness. Often, just this act of observation will result in a feeling of the problem having dissipated. If that happens, observe that also from the position of caring observer. I once practiced this act of observation when I was injured and unable to play tennis. I reacted at first to the pain in my foot with statements like, "This injury is keeping me from doing what I want to do and I'm really upset about it." I found that no matter what I tried, the pain persisted, and I was unable to pivot and consequently had to discontinue an activity that I loved. I then took the witness stance. I no longer saw myself as having an injury. I attributed the pain only to my body and not to me. I witnessed the entire thing and merely watched it. I lovingly witnessed the pain, the way it showed up, my feelings of frustration about it, the color of the swelling, everything. But I refused to think of it as mine. It was only my body's problem. The very same day that I did this, the entire discomfort disappeared. I mean, it was gone from my body. I had put my attention on what was occurring and detached myself from it. And in what seemed like a few hours, I no longer had the pain, and I was playing tennis as if I had never experienced any injury at all. In order to know the benefit of witnessing, you will have to banish the doubt about this as something that will work for you. Remember, you have been conditioned to believe that your body is the essence of your humanity. You've been taught to tackle problems with your physical and intellectual apparatus, not your higher self. Practice new self-talk sentences to replace your old identification with your physical body. I am that which owns this body. I am not the body itself. I can't be reached if you come to me with hatred or anger. I cannot worry when I refuse to be the worrier and simply observe that worrier and the worries. Self-talk sentences will keep you centered on your spiritual domain. You will find that many things that you worried about or experienced in a negative fashion are slowly beginning to diminish from your life. Rather than engaging in confrontations with others, try being the witness. Rise above the temptation to make someone else wrong, and instead, watch yourself and your opponent from the witness perspective. In a quiet place, practice observing your thoughts for 30 minutes. Just sit your mind down and watch as thoughts come and go. While you're doing this, keep reminding yourself that those thoughts are not you. Give recapitulation a try. You can sit down and begin to recapitulate your life from today backwards right up to your birth, if you decide this is useful. This process involves imagining the people and the events that have been part of your life, including family and people you've worked with, lovers, close friends, schoolmates, neighbors, and anyone else. You begin by moving your head from left to right very slowly as you bring the people and the surroundings into your consciousness. As you move your head back and forth very slowly, you begin sweeping the energy back into you that you lost in those encounters. You are recalling the energy that you dissipated. Some people have spent as long as 2 years in this recapitulation process. When they were finished, they were re-energized and able to access their new energy to transport themselves inward to new dimensions of reality, new inner worlds that defy all that they had believed possible previously. The practice of recapitulation is recapturing energy. It gives you a much clearer picture of the need for everything that happened in your life to have transpired exactly as it did. Recapitulation shatters the belief that energy once spent is lost. You can access both your body and your energy body and know new worlds of perception. Recapitulation is the entryway to those worlds. These ideas of recapturing energy, sweeping away useless energy, and exchanging energy between people may seem absurd to you. If they do, it is because you have come to rely so heavily on your five senses that anything that is extrasensory seems unbelievable or unthinkable. Everything in the universe is energy. You cannot move without influencing energy. You are a storehouse of energy, and you always have been. Give yourself permission to go beyond your senses and experience a new kind of formless energy that will put you in touch with worlds you may never have imagined. The process of recapitulation is exquisitely exciting. You can redistribute your normal energy and enhance it in such a way so as to give you a somersault into the world of the unimaginable. I recommend that you read Tasha Abelard's The Sorcerer's Crossing for a detailed description of this recapitulation process. Even if you find it a struggle to cultivate the witness totally in your life, give some of these ideas a workout. More than anything, the witness posture introduces you fully to your higher self. It lets you in on the big secret. You are not your problems, your frustrations, or even your physical life. You are that which is noticing it all. You cannot truly grasp or examine this sacred part of yourself because it resides in the invisible you, yet it is the heart of your sacred quest. You want to allow your sacred self, rather than your ego, to be the controlling influence in your life. You want a deeper and a richer experience of life. It will elude you if you don't get to know this higher part of yourself. The witness will introduce you to this knowing. Nisargadatta Maharaj writes in I Am That, "It is the I am the body idea that is so calamitous. It blinds you completely to your real nature. Even for a moment, do not think that you are the body. Give yourself no name, no shape. In the darkness and the silence, reality is found." As you cultivate this new awareness, you will find yourself enjoying the silence even more than when you used to seek out the noise as your companion. Cultivating the witness will introduce you to yourself not as the doer, but as the observer of the doer. You will come to welcome this realm as a respite from the hurry-up world that you've been living in. Those who measure such things estimate that our minds have 60,000 thoughts during the waking hours of every day. The problem with this is, today we will have essentially the same 60,000 thoughts that we had yesterday and the day before that. Our inner worlds are a frenetic beehive of activity with the same thoughts endlessly repeating themselves. This inner frenzy I call the inner dialogue. It is an omnipresent buzz in the form of silent thoughts. Most of this inner dialogue is a personal inventory of beliefs we've been trained to accept by others. Those thoughts include all of your beliefs about everything you can possibly imagine. You may remember what I said earlier about beliefs. I explained that they are laced with doubt because you've got them from others. Therefore, your inner dialogue is a perpetual experience of reinforcing doubt. Doubt about yourself, your ability to create miracles, your ability to manifest divine relationships, to heal yourself, to materialize prosperity, and finally, doubt about your ability to know the bliss of inner peace. This, then, is the third key to higher awareness. I call it shutting down the inner dialogue. Learning to be quiet. Learning to experience the bliss of silence. The way to get to this place of inner peace and consequently to experience higher awareness is to shut down the internal frenzy. The Chinese sage Seng Chan Zen gave us the following piece of wisdom. Stop talking, stop thinking, and there is nothing you will not understand. Return to the root and you will find meaning. Look inward. And in a flash, you will conquer the apparent and the void. He is counseling us to simply stop talking and stop thinking. This is the third key to the sense of peacefulness that is a part of the way of the sacred quest. I want to make it clear that peace is not the absence of conflict. Peace is the experience of the presence of God. As you learn to shut down your inner dialogue and become more peaceful, you will begin to know the presence of God in your life. That presence will be felt in both your body and your inner world. Beliefs are removed. Belief is replaced with knowing. At different times in my past, both alcohol and other substances were a part of my own life path. Through meditation, I was able to leave alcohol behind, and I have never touched it since. But with other substances, I believed I could use them when I chose to for an energizing effect beyond anything I had ever experienced. I was able to use them, enjoy increased energy, and leave them alone for long periods of time. But a time came when I knew I was making foolish and non-spiritual choices connected with seeking out these insidious substances. My personal challenge became to rid myself of these insidious habits. I tried reading my way out of it, but I went back. I tried acupuncture, discussions with experts, and herbal cures, but I went back. I was determined that I would no longer play around with any substance, but I went back. Then I had what I call a holy instant, which was for me a divine experience. At 4:05 a.m. on a January morning, I was meditating. In the still quiet of that meditation, the thought of never again using a substance became real. It was my first absolutely direct experience of God. My entire inner screen of awareness became a bright luminescence as I heard a voice say, "You've tried everything else. Why not try me?" I have never in my life known such peace and certainty that God was with me and around me. I felt overwhelmed by the bliss I experienced. I listened to that voice, felt the presence of God, and have not since experienced the slightest desire to go back to any substance. I have debated with myself about putting this very personal story on this tape. That is, my ego self debated with my higher self. But I knew my experience with chemical substances involved helping others to look within instead of outside of themselves for both the excitement and the peace their higher self has for them. If, in my telling this story, one person who experiments with any substance and knows that it is out of control decides to shut down the inner turmoil and seek the help of their loving presence, then it will have been worth it. You needn't have the challenge of getting off drugs to find value applying this third key to higher awareness. It works the same way for every experience you are ready to transcend. Getting to silence and then having God be your personal knowing presence. Getting to silence requires conscious effort on your part. When going within, use the metaphor of the pebble dropping through the various levels of your mind. While the pebble drops, be the witness. Observe compassionately all your chatter and thoughts as you descend to the unified field. When you notice your mind overly crowded with thoughts, practice not focusing on anything just for a few moments. Tell yourself, my mind is full of the disturbance of chatter and thoughts. I'm going to try to spend 5 minutes without any thoughts bombarding me. I'll dismiss every thought just for a few moments. Use your breath as a means to keep your mind from chattering away ceaselessly. You can do this by focusing your compassionate witness on your breathing. Breathe in deeply, excluding any thoughts as you concentrate on the in-breath. Then exhale slowly and fully with the same concentration. When thoughts appear, as they will, know that they are signaling you to return to mindfulness of your breathing in and out. Your heartbeat can also be used as a focal point for the witness. Return to the steady, rhythmic beat of your heart when you notice thoughts intruding. When you find your thoughts just below the surface in the analyzing level, think of a rose. As you replace the analyzing with the beauty of a rose, you might want to recall this verse by the poet Rabindranath Tagore. Do not carry a rose to our beloved, because in it is already embodied a message which, unlike our language of words, cannot be analyzed. That is, remember that the habit of analyzing or picking things apart in a judging fashion keeps you from knowing the truth that is at the center of your being. The rose needs no analyzing, as the poet reminds us. It simply is. The same is true of you. At the synthesizing level, when you are feeling the beauty and unity of life, you may discover that you are entering thoughts of pleasure about enjoying this spiritual space. Let go of those thoughts, too. The ego enjoys convincing you that you are better than others because you are more spiritual or have deeper understanding. It swims through your consciousness with thoughts like those. When it does, gently send it elsewhere for this time of meditation or prayer. Make a call to your local Transcendental Meditation Center, listed in the phone book of every major city in the world, and sign up for their introductory course. This is a magnificent introduction to finding inner peace and shutting down the inner dialogue conducted by highly qualified instructors. The purpose of TM is to teach you firsthand how to get to that unified field and to learn what your resistance to the process means. I recommend it strongly. I've practiced TM for many years. In any moment of stress, go within for just a few moments and allow the pebble to drop, even if it is only for a few seconds. You can actually practice quieting inner dialogue any place. I found the technique useful even in the middle of a tennis match. When I've done this, I've discovered that some of the most important moments in athletic competition are between the points, not during the points. That space is like the space between your thoughts when you approach a higher level of functioning. In situations like a tennis match, you can stay centered by concentrating on your breathing between the points. You will become immune to external distractions this way. Try to make your activities into meditations rather than stressful competitions. Shutting down the inner dialogue does not have to be something you practice alone in a quiet place. You can do it at any location, regardless of the external circumstances. As you gather the spiritual force within you in these joyous moments of silence, you will direct your ego to take a back seat to your higher self. It is this final key to higher awareness that awaits your attention. At any given moment in your life, you are choosing between two pictures or evaluations of yourself. Your choices include the one offered by your soul or the higher self, which I think of as the voice of God, and the one offered by the ego, or your false idea of yourself. You decide how you view yourself and how you view others as well. Essentially, you accept either ego's picture of yourself and others or that of your higher spiritual self. In every moment of your life, you have the option to choose peace for yourself. The ego wants you in a constant state of agitation to keep you from embracing your higher self. It convinces you that if you are not always on edge, you can't grow. But you must keep in mind that experiencing this inner turmoil is a choice that you have made by allowing your false self to dominate your life. When you make the choice for peace, you are literally allowing God into your life. So this fourth key to higher awareness, I call taming the ego. Learning how to specifically allow the higher part of yourself rather than your lower identities to be in control of your life. We all long for the peacefulness of being without turmoil and angst. There is a feeling of an inner glow when we know that we are on course, on our sacred path. So why do we so frequently choose the opposite emotions and thoughts and inner beliefs which agitate our minds and cloud our perceptions and distort our relationships? You need to carefully examine your choices that block your experience of peace, of God. Just knowing that peace is always an alternative is a significant awakening. These tools will help to tame the ego when it demands that you pursue separateness or specialness. Replacing the turmoil that you so often choose is then a simple matter of allowing your higher self to take over in any situation where you are about to allow turmoil to enter. Your ego will push you in the direction of the fight, away from peace. You must be ready to see it as it is about to happen and invite your higher self to send your ego a not wanted right now message. I'm fond of this A Course in Miracles quotation concerning ego replacement. You will not find peace except the peace of God. Accept this fact and save yourself the agony of yet more bitter disappointment, bleak despair, and doubt. Seek you no further. There is nothing else for you to find except the peace of God. When you have an absence of peace at any time in your life, know that your ego, the false idea of yourself, is what's really responsible. Keeping in mind that every thought has a physical counterpart, you can see that an ego-produced constant state of tension that comes with proving yourself, hurrying, chattering, worrying, chasing, acquiring, and competing, also involves tension in the body. High blood pressure, ulcers, skin disorders, headaches, back pain, and even more serious ailments such as cancer, strokes, and liver disorders are the payoffs for the dominance of the ego. These disorders manifest because you allow ego to create turmoil to avoid the peace that is found within. This awareness of the ego's program should help as you move toward restraining ego and getting to know your higher self. The ego, that false idea that we all have of ourselves, wants to maintain this persistent state of inner confrontation for some very solid reasons. When you understand your ego, you are much more apt to work at restraining it. When you know why your ego behaves as it does, you will then be able to make the adjustments necessary for your higher self to have a greater influence in your life. Here are some of the most obvious reasons why your ego keeps you in this state of turmoil rather than peace. Most important, your ego has been with you since childhood. It has been nurtured by almost everyone you've ever known. Generations of those nurturers have also been dominated by their egos. Your ego wants to survive. If it can keep you in a state of inner turmoil, it will block you from knowing your spiritual self. From the ego's perspective, God is a huge threat, so it will do all that it can to keep you from experiencing that inner peacefulness where God's voice is so beautifully clear. Your ego does not want you to change. The idea of yourself as self-important and special nourishes ego, keeping it healthy and operating at full strength. Even though ego itself is an illusion, just a false idea that you carry around with you, it behaves as if it really had a life of its own. Your ego will make every effort to convince you that you do not need to change. In fact, if you're asking yourself why you shouldn't feel special, you are listening to it right now. These are the kinds of thoughts that have kept you from making the changes leading to inner peace. The ego thrives on fear. When you are afraid, you are at the mercy of the ego. Fear will drive you to behave in ways that undermine your sacred self. Your higher self tells you that there is nothing to fear, that love is the answer to everything, and that God is what love is all about. Your loving presence assures you that you do not need to feel guilty or fearful, and that if you do, it will subside when you experience inner peace. When you experience love within, you have no guilt and no fear. You know that everything you are experiencing is in order, including your woes, which are your greatest teachers, and the death of your body, which is ordained for all the world of the manifest. You know that death is a reward, not a punishment. Therefore, you have nothing to fear unless you listen to your ego encouraging fear and dismissing God. Your ego wants you to be on the move, looking for more things to consume and more possessions to own. The more you are on the move in your life, the less time you will have for knowing your spiritual base. Ego cheers you on to stay busy, to keep moving, and to avoid the inner quest where your ego faces restraint. Your ego wants you to face outward. It wants you to continue facing the wrong way so that you cannot experience the presence of God in your life. By facing away rather than inward, you ensure the strong presence of your ego forever. The consequences are that you will continually feel the pressure to compare yourself with others, the need to defeat others in order to feel powerful or even worthwhile, to have more and better toys, to accumulate more trophies. All of this facing outward is the work of the ego. When you refuse to listen, it shouts that you must be upset when others get ahead of you, that you are worthless when you lose, that being number one is more important than anything, that to settle for less is to admit to being a loser. All of these beliefs are deeply ingrained within you. It is very difficult for you to even imagine not having them because the work of your ego and the egos of so many others have been working overtime, convincing you that this is the only way to be. Facing outward brings about a sense of inner conflict and agitation that keeps you pursuing the gold stars that the ego offers. These are a few of the more obvious payoffs your ego uses to keep you in a confrontational rather than a peaceful mood. I have provided some alternatives to the persuasive tactics of your ego. Keep in mind that you can restrain this ego simply by the power of your own will. All it takes is a determination to live by the dictates of your higher self and a willingness to act on that determination rather than succumb to the easier path of the ego. Here are a few ideas for putting peace in your life permanently. Thinking of yourself as a peaceful person is the first step, but it is only the first step. The thought must translate into action in order for you to know peace. Work at curbing your inclination to create confrontation and disruption in the lives of others. A simple practice of pausing and asking yourself whether your ego, which loves turmoil, or your higher self, which loves peace, is about to act. That pause will help you to send out a peaceful response, even in situations where you are feeling impatient or misunderstood. In those situations, you will be able to state simply, for example, "You are really having a rough day," to a hassled clerk, rather than, "I've been waiting for 15 minutes already and I'm really feeling abused." Send out peace by catching yourself and then consulting your loving presence for a response, rather than relying on your ego. Practice releasing the emotions of fear and guilt and replacing them with love and forgiveness and kindness. Release the guilt by forgiving yourself and vowing to avoid that kind of conduct in the future. You do not need the guilt unless you're going to allow your ego to continue its dominance over your life forever. For example, make a list of all the things that keep you from loving yourself. Your list might include being overweight and jealous or nervous or addicted or incompetent or uncoordinated. Then, regardless of how much effort it takes, reverse your mental sentences and state that you love yourself while being fat, while being addicted, and so on. This will help you to feel peaceful about the choices you've made and to realize that you are not that body or those desires. You are the invisible chooser. As you become more peaceful with the chooser, you will begin to replace the unhealthy choice in a spirit of love. Examine everything that offends you and see if you can get your ego out of the picture. If hunger and starvation in the world offend you, try shifting to a new awareness. Somehow, in some way that I do not comprehend, these things occur in divine order, and so too does my desire to change it exist in divine order. Shed what offends you and act on your desire to make corrections. There will then be no need to fight. Similarly, if you find someone else's behavior offensive, you are interpreting that behavior from your own self-absorbed position, which is that they shouldn't act the way they do. You choose to be offended, hurt, or angry by their behavior. But they are acting the way they are. Your being offended is your ego talking to you to keep you anxious and upset. If you don't take it personally, and if you see the behavior for what it is, you can work to eradicate the evils of the world unimpeded by your ego's encouragement to be offended. Keep in mind that grievances bring turmoil, while communication brings peace. If you want peace in your life, rid yourself of your grievances. The way to shed these grievances is to let go of your own self-absorption and to practice forgiveness rather than revenge. As you let go, you will feel a sense of peace overtaking you. If you are angry towards someone in your life, no matter how difficult you may find it, work at communicating with that person about your aggrieved feelings. Your embarrassment or inner anguish over being wronged is just what your ego wants you to experience, since it will keep you away from your sacred quest and keep you in the clutches of your anxiety-loving ego. Keep this little sentence ready to consult. Judgment and peace are antithetical. A Course in Miracles says the strain of constant judgment is virtually intolerable. It is curious that an ability so debilitating would be so deeply cherished. You must make a daily effort to look upon others without condemnation. Every judgment takes you away from your goal of peace. Your ego loves your judgments because with them you remain in a constant state of anguish and remorse. Keep in mind that you do not define anyone with your judgment. You only define yourself as someone who needs to judge. Judging others with condemnation removes the possibility of your experiencing love. If you can practice just being still rather than condemning, you will get to the bliss I am talking about. You do not have to pretend that you love something that you loathe. Just get still and let the judgments subside. Peace is not found in being right or being hurt or being angry. By all means, work toward righting the wrongs you perceive, but do it with an understanding that an angry heart keeps you from knowing God and the path of your sacred quest. Peace will come to you when you are a healer rather than a judge. Essentially, embracing the truth is welcoming your higher self and coming to know God. All that is not authentic will drop away automatically. Your ego works hard to convince you that you are separate and better than everyone else, and you know that it does not take kindly to your embracing anything that threatens its existence. But remember that this is your inauthentic self, your false self. Deception is going to play a big role in your life when you embrace ego as your guide. Therefore, in order to abandon your reliance on that false self with all of its deception, you will have to make a new agreement with truth. I encourage you to actually write yourself a contract in which you agree to include truth as your companion in your thoughts, in your conversations, and in your life. This is a big challenge and perhaps difficult for you, but it is guaranteed to lead you to the path of your sacred self. Begin by looking honestly and fearlessly at who you are beneath all the surface trappings that you have surrounded yourself with. You have a human storyline, as does every person who has ever lived on this planet. That storyline begins with your conception, continues through your childhood, and all of your personal triumphs and tribulations, right up to this very moment. Your ego tells you this is your kingdom, your true identity, and therefore you must do whatever it takes to make this story turn out to be a good one for you. But you already know by virtue of listening to this tape that this is not so. There is a divine whisper within you telling you that this is not your ultimate home, and that the things this life offers are unfulfilling to a part of you. You sense that the real you does not value appearance and possessions or achievements or even physical strength or talent or intellect, because all these things eventually atrophy and disappear. You know that there is an eternal aspect of you beneath the surface, and that for this part of you, only the truth will suffice. It is similar to the truth Michelangelo knew as he sculpted the statue of David. He described knowing that the statue of David was already inside the block of marble. Part of his artistic life was spent chipping away the excess to reveal God's creation. Try to visualize your inner life in this fashion. What exists within you is not some kind of hideousness that needs to be lied about. There's nothing imperfect about you that requires you to create a whole world of deception in order to make you worthy in the eyes of others. There is a loving presence residing within you. It is as perfect as Michelangelo's David, just waiting for you to allow it to emerge. I have worked very hard on this matter of truth in my own life. For a large part of my life, I have had only a very casual relationship with truth. It was never my intention to be malicious or harm anyone, but I allowed myself to reach into my ego's large repertoire of deceptions. This casual relationship with truth kept me from knowing my higher self. I had learned to listen to my ego rather than to my higher self whenever it was convenient to explain away my own weaknesses or inadequacies. If I wanted to have an affair, I found it easy to explain it away as my entitlement to the pleasures of the moment. Lying to protect that pleasure was simply what my ego demanded. The ego was very strong in this direction. I found myself on the spiritual path as the result of a calling rather than as a conscious choice. As this happened, I saw that deep within me, I did not accept myself as a divine being. I was at the mercy of my false self, which told me to project an image to the world and did not want me to know God or the truth that is embodied in that knowing. Consequently, I was deceiving myself to maintain that false self. Gradually, it became intolerable to live with the lies, even the small distortions. The truth terrified my ego in the beginning. Then, as I tamed my ego, truth became an enjoyable feeling of freedom. Truth does literally set us free, as St. John told us in the New Testament. The truth shall set you free. Truth sets you free because you no longer are focused on yourself and what kind of an image you are projecting or protecting. You find your identification in the world beyond, with that which is eternal. We see and hear lies all the time. The media is filled with advertising claiming all manner of things that have nothing to do with reality. According to advertising, you can recapture your youth if you drive a certain car, or find love if you wear the advertised fragrance, or gain new energy if you eat a certain cereal, or regain lost intimacy if you use a certain deodorant. Our government promotes its policies with lies and spends money it doesn't have. Legislators tell us that we cannot have health care because we cannot afford it, yet they legislate themselves comprehensive care. We are supposed to believe that there is no money available to assist the poor and ill, yet we eagerly finance wars in faraway places. We've all become used to lies. You may have even convinced yourself that to tell lies is a worthwhile activity. When you adopt distortion and deception, the problem is that you'll always need more of the same to keep covering your tracks. The same is true for our society. Ultimately, as we move toward a more spiritual base, the lies will decrease, both in our culture and in our personal lives. At first, when you discontinue lying, it stings. It's like a new remedy on an old open wound. Your willingness to think, feel, and act truthfully will expose some warts. The warts are you. The mistakes are you. They are not unique, and they do not say anything ugly about you. The sting and the discomfort will be soothed as you let go of the need to deceive. As you gain this self-awareness, you also grow in the awareness of not being your physical body. You no longer need to project anything other than your peaceful divineness to friends, family, and even strangers. You've made the transition from phony to real in a holy instant. You recognize your inner sanctity and are willing to forgive yourself for any and all mistakes now viewed as lessons. You have moved to truth. The inner knowing that you no longer have to lie or distort anything for the sake of the approval of others or to elevate yourself in others' eyes is the freedom that truth brings. The way I figure it, that a Saul of Tarsus, a murdering thief, can be transformed in a moment of holy insight and become the Apostle St. Paul simply by letting in the truth and living it, so can Wayne Dyer admit to his mistakes of the ego and live the truth, and so can you. As Thomas Merton put it, we must be true inside to ourselves before we can know a truth that is outside of us. Moving from phony to real is first being true inside and then experiencing the truth of living it. As you begin to live these truths, you not only turn your own world around, you also affect the transformation of the world around you. The truth not only sets you free, but it will set the world free as well. The world's ego cannot stand up to the celestial light of the truth any more than your personal ego can. The distortions that you see around you, the cheating, the lying, stealing, and killing, will begin to disappear as we reach within our own individual selves and transform the ego energy. Here are some suggestions for ridding yourself of deception and embracing truth full time. Make an inner commitment to establish a new relationship with truth. The way to make this happen is to catch yourself when you're exaggerating or deceiving anyone, including yourself. Then silently tell yourself that you are about to puff yourself up by overstating the truth. Decide to simply relate exactly what happened, no more, no less, and see how that feels. You will discover as you catch yourself immediately before the lie that you are consulting your higher self, which flourishes in truth instead of giving in to ego demands to be false. You will enjoy a deeper, richer experience of life that feels refreshing compared with the phony presentation of yourself seeking approval. Be on the alert for inner dialogues that dwell on your accomplishments rather than the path of purpose. Recently, I remember giving a speech to a large group of radio broadcasters and was very pleased with my performance. After the lecture, as I was jogging, I was reliving the lecture experience. At the very moment that I was seeing in my mind's eye the crowd getting to its feet and applauding, I turned a corner and smacked my elbow into a wall so hard that it sent a sharp pain through my arm that lasted for several weeks. Every time I felt that pain, I was reminded to get my ego out of the way and stop focusing on myself. I was reminded of my purpose and my service and not to get caught up in the applause. This is the end of Side 3.